When the rules of society are broken, things can get a little wild. This is Wild Society.
Hey everyone, welcome to Wild Society. This is Courtney.
I'm still Chad.
I'm Jordan.
I'm Bethany.
Welcome to our bonus Halloween episode.
Ooh, tis time.
I'm so excited. Halloween's my favorite holiday.
Me too.
It's dark and rainy and drizzly and cold outside for the first time this year.
Like really cold.
We're setting the mood.
I'm wearing shorts.
It dropped like 20 something degrees today.
Yeah.
I'm scared.
Welcome to Oklahoma.
Love it. Finally.
We're taking a break from our usual true crime episode, and we're going into the creepy and the spooky.
Courtney is wearing haunted headphones.
Literally, they might be haunted.
Yeah, they might be haunted.
Do you realize every week you talk about something that I'm wearing? I feel like I have to live up to some sort of expectation when I come here.
You do.
Okay, I'll try better next week.
We thought Courtney's headphones were haunted, and then we realized that they were just unplugged and were making a weird noise.
No, they were low on battery.
They were low on battery.
The battery was low. They were clicking.
I was like, click.
I was in here the other day, and they were going off, and I was like, what the hell is that sound? I looked for like 10 minutes, and then finally, I like laid my ear on your headphone to make sure it was that, and it was, and I so unplugged it.
Creepy.
We were scared, but also a little bit excited, because we thought we had a story, but we didn't.
There might be a ghost. We have lots of ghost stories today, though.
So excited.
I thought we were telling Christmas stories. I got the memo wrong.
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
I failed.
Before we get started, though, I do have a little story for you guys. For all of our listeners out there, my husband and I just moved into a new house about 2 months ago, and we've been renovating, and I had to clean the house because it was disgusting. But I was in the master bathroom in the water closet, and there's a cabinet in there. So I was like, I need to clean up top, like top of the cabinet. So I decided not to stand on a ladder, which wasn't the smartest thing. And I was like, I'm just going to swipe my hand up there and like clean.
Oh, mm-mm.
So I swiped my hand up and something fell at me onto my head and to the floor. And it was a Ziploc bag. And I was like, that's weird. So I pick it up off the floor. Are y'all ready for this?
It had gold in it.
It had human teeth in it.
No, what?
I'm not joking. Gold. I freaked out. Like I picked it up and then I dropped it and I screamed for Ben. Because I was like, oh, heck no, I'm not touching that. Because it was like adult teeth. It's not baby teeth.
Ooh.
What if it's evidence from a crime?
Was it Ben's teeth?
No, it's not Ben's teeth.
It's the former owner's teeth.
I don't know whose teeth they are, but they were in my house. And honestly, I don't know what happened to them because I made Ben take them away somewhere because I had the heebie-jeebies. I was like, oh my God, we just found teeth. But I have a picture of it.
Well, now you might be arrested for tampering with evidence.
Wait, maybe. Then now we're like witnesses. Yeah. No.
Great, Courtney. Now we're all drawn into this.
Great.
Even the listeners of the podcast.
You're all implicated. All of you listening.
I did that on purpose, y'all.
So before we get into it, head over to our website, wildsocietypodcast.com. You can see pictures from all the stories we're going to be telling. Wherever you're listening to us from, be sure to hit follow or subscribe so you'll be sure to get our episodes regularly.
I have always loved Halloween specials.
Yeah.
And I am going to embarrass myself. My favorite Halloween special every year was back in the day when Pretty Little Liars would have their annual.
Pretty Little Liars?
I am a PLL fan.
Okay. So am I.
If y'all didn't know, Chad is gay.
Oh my God.
I have a huge girl crush on Ashley Benson.
Oh, I had a girl and boy crush on the whole cast.
On all of them.
Courtney, you love PLL?
I do. It's been a long time since I actually watched it, but when it was out, right. I watched it.
Yeah, I watched like the first three-ish seasons, and then I stopped.
Their Halloween episodes were always good because a lot of shows would make like throwaway episodes, but they're always part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And they were scary, but they were also PLL-ish.
Should go back and watch that show.
Yes, it was really good. Really, really good.
I think the only show like that I ever watched was probably The O.C.
Oh. Classic.
I loved The O.C.
Me too.
Pretty Little Liars is everyone last in me, but the OC is
I'm sorry, we might have to duel this out because yeah. I think I'm, I mean, I do love me some PLL, but the OC is kind of like the OG.
Yeah, it is. Sorry.
Tell us what you think, listeners.
I'm quitting for the fourth time.
I'm with you, Chad. Don't worry.
House divided.
Do you guys watch ghost shows on TV?
I don't because I get too scared.
I used to a lot more. I don't so much anymore.
My favorite is Ghost Nation on Travel Channel.
It's really good.
I love it because they debunk a lot of stuff. So they'll go in and they'll always look for if there's a scientific explanation and they look to help people too.
They're not like blowing smoke up your ass. They're not there to put on a TV show, really. They're there if something makes a sound, they're not afraid to find out what the sound was. They're not going to be like, oh, it's some demon and
hype it up.
Yeah.
You know, like some shows, the cameraman is like, he's coughing and they're like, that was a goat. And you could see the cameraman coughing in the mirror. They don't do that kind of stuff. So
it's a different show.
It's a really good show.
To check it out. I probably won't though, because I just get too scared. Can't do the scary, creepy, even though I learn about true crime all the time.
Yeah, I was like, this, you're on the wrong
but
podcast.
When it's in the realm of like spiritual and unseen, it's scarier to me.
You're not going to like my story.
This episode last night, I think it took place in Pennsylvania somewhere. And this house was apparently haunted by these ghosts, and the land the house was on was cursed by a witch who was apparently murdered and buried under this tree on the property. Well, they brought in three different, what are they called, cadaver dogs?
Mm-hmm. From the police.
From the police. All three at three different times ran to this tree.
Mm. Creepy.
And so they actually dug up the tree and they found pieces of fabric, like clothing. And then they did a some kind of luminescence test on it or whatever.
Luminol, I think.
To show that there was blood on it. Mm-hmm. So there, it was like a true thing.
Whoa.
And it lit up, which means there was human
blood.
Hemoglobin.
That's a no for me.
Yeah.
Nope.
Crazy.
Scary.
So what's really fun about the stories we're about to tell, all of them, well, at least one of them from each of us, you can actually go visit if you're into that.
Yeah.
What we're about to tell you, they're not just things that happened 200, 300 years ago. All of them, you can go and experience them for yourself.
Yes.
But please wear a mask if you decide to do that. That's our PSA for this bonus episode.
And 6 feet apart, even from ghosts.
Yes. Do you think ghosts understand COVID?
Heck no.
Do you think they're looking around? They're like, why is everyone wearing masks?
Well, probably, but they're like, I'm going to touch you anyways.
Yeah, they don't care.
They're dead. Already dead.
Yeah.
So, have any of you ever thought, I know Chad has had ghost experiences. Have you all had ghost experiences? Really?
No.
Have you ever seen anything?
Mm-mm.
Have you?
The night that my grandmother died, she lived with us before she passed away. And that night when I was laying in my bed, I like saw her in my doorway. I was really scared, but then I was also like, oh, she was just checking on me one last time.
Mm-hmm.
It was strange. And I could have just been like in a weird sleep. I don't know. But that's the only type of anything like that I've had.
My first experience was I was in the eighth grade. I think this was 2002. We lived in kind of an older home. And I was down on my hands and knees cleaning out the bottom of my closet. And I felt like somebody was standing right behind me. And I thought it was my dad because my dad was home at the time. And I turned around and of course no one was there, but it was just this really intense feeling. I've kind of shown my friends kind of how it feels like if you're standing there and you have a friend walk up behind you, literally to where they're almost breathing on the back of your neck. That's what it feels like. It's just this really intense feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I feel like there are ghosts following me around at different times, not constantly. But there have been times, like one time I was home alone and I was vacuuming, and this was probably 10, 15 years ago. I just felt like someone was watching me in the living room, and it got really intense and really intense, and it got so intense, I just curled into a ball. I just yelled out, leave me alone.
Did you feel it leave?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
If you tell them to go away,
yeah,
most of them will.
Most of them will. So I have before, and they go away, but they always end up coming back. Ever since then, since that happened in 2002, I sleep with the covers over my head because there's always, I feel like someone standing next to the bed.
Even still?
Yeah.
I didn't realize this till like a year ago. And one day I woke up in the middle of the night and I looked. And I'm like, what is he doing? The next day I looked and it's like, he's sleeping with covers over his head. That's so weird. And I made fun of him until he told me why, and then it wasn't so funny.
Oh my gosh. So you feel like there's someone beside the bed.
Yeah. And not only just standing there, I can feel like it moving around and walking. One time I was staying at a hotel room in San Diego. I woke up in the middle of the night and I had, of course, I had the covers over my head, but I was getting hot. So I kind of, sometimes I'll crack them to where like part of my face will go through so I can get some air. And I could feel something standing at the foot of my bed.
Yeah.
And I could feel it moving, walking from the foot of the bed to my side of the bed up to where my head was, and it just stopping.
No, no. Oh my gosh, I would have screamed.
And that has happened countless times throughout the years. I've never felt like it's trying to harm me or it's malevolent or anything like that. It's just more of annoying.
Oh, really?
Like maybe it's trying to get my attention. So Chad's first house, when we first got together, I moved in there. And he had a roommate at the time. I was there by myself, had a really long living room, and you would enter the foyer and then you would enter the living room, and it was really long with an open kitchen at the other end. And then off the foyer was a side hall with the bedrooms. Well, I was in the kitchen looking toward the foyer across the living room.
It's pronounced foyer.
Foyer, whatever.
Or fancy.
Chad comes home through the garage into the kitchen. I'm like, hey, hey, hey. I see something walk from the foyer into the bedroom hallway. I go, oh, is Philip here? And he goes, no, he's working. And I was like, I just saw somebody walk from the foyer into, I mean,
ew.
Totally. I wasn't focused on it, but I saw it out of my peripheral vision. I know I saw it.
And you can tell when he's dead serious on these things.
Yeah.
One time at one of our houses, y'all, we've owned so many damn houses. We just have nicknames for them. Just FYI.
29 houses.
So at this house, we were getting ready to go out to dinner or something, and you were upstairs getting ready, and I was downstairs waiting for you. And I was in the entryway again, and I hear, it was real quiet, and I hear, hey.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like a female's voice, but it was clear as day, just, hey. My hair like stood up, and I went back upstairs, and I told you, Chad.
Do you remember what I did?
Oh, you tried to scare me.
He went back in the bathroom, so I ran upstairs and I opened up all the hallway drawers and ran back downstairs.
That is so mean.
And then I heard him from the top yell, oh my God, what is this?
Yeah, that scared the shit out of me.
He thought the ghost had done that, but it was me.
I would have punched
you. But the way that house was situated, there would be no neighbors in that area to like be out in the yard.
Yeah, like no voices carrying.
Right,
anything.
Nothing.
We were talking about scary shows earlier. Chad and I were watching some ghost show a couple years ago, and they were talking about something called a Ghost Box app, which if you've never heard of it, I learned through the show. And there's several different kinds if you go search for it. There are apps you can download, and if you leave them going, apparently ghosts can communicate through them. Words will pop up, and I don't know if it's through frequencies. I don't know how it works. I'm not going to pretend to be some kind of expert. But we were watching it, and the husband downloaded it. Somehow they end up getting some demon haunting their house, and that was the whole story. So after we were done, I wanted to see if this was real. So I got on there, and I downloaded one. There were several, so I just chose one.
Let me repeat. The ghost box brought a demon into this guy's life. So Jordan decides, I'm going to do the same thing.
Let's download that.
Hey, you know, when in Rome.
Oh,
and I'm not really scared of that stuff. So anyway, I download it and I leave it going. I leave it turned on when I go to bed. Hopefully, you know, something by the time I check it in the morning, something will have popped up. Well, for like a week, I leave it going and I get nothing. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, this is fake as shit.
Can we just talk about how he rolled his eyes when he said that?
Yeah.
He picked up nothing.
I know it sucked.
I'd be going, thank God. Yeah.
I'm used to his eyes rolling. I didn't even pick that up. That's just his face to me.
Okay, I leave it going. I wake up around midnight or so. It's 12-something. I glance at it, and it has one word, and it says Ellis. And I go, oh, shit, I got a word. That's freaky. So I go ahead and turn it off, and I go to bed. And then the next day, I'm driving to work, and I show up a little early to work, so I sit in my car. My dad calls me, and so we're just chatting, and I just happened to tell him about this ghost app and that this word popped up and that, you know, it was freaky. And I told him that it said Ellis, and he kind of paused, and he goes, Ellis, that was your Uncle Rex's middle name.
My gosh.
And I immediately was like, what? That is crazy. Just to make sure he wasn't fucking with me, I called my grandma just to check. And it's not my, he's actually my great uncle. He's my grandmother's brother. I told her the story and she was freaked out too. She thought that was insane. Y'all, I have no idea how Ellis appeared on this ghost app. I try to come at it from a point of view of a skeptic. Are they getting on the internet somehow? Are they somehow accessing? I'm like, but how many people would have to be behind this app to find out this information through thousands of people downloading this app?
And to like go through your family tree.
And I combed the internet for anything about my great uncle, and there is nothing with his middle name. Not even his obituary has his middle name.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. When I told my dad this, I mean, my dad was a little freaked out. He thought it was crazy. He goes, when your Uncle Rex was alive, he used to joke and kid around that if he ever died, he was going to come back and try to haunt people.
Oh my gosh.
That's the part that got me. He basically said he was going to do this. And then his name pops up on an app that Jordan didn't even know that was his middle name.
And Jordan's felt ghosts his whole life. He chose you.
Well, Jordan, you were born in a very weird way, too.
Yes. So when I was born, I actually died. My umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck 7 times, and I suffocated, and I actually died. They did an emergency C-section on my mom, and when they unwrapped my umbilical cord, my heart started beating again. So I always kind of wondered if maybe I'm susceptible, or I can never say that word right, six.
Susceptible. Oh, susceptible. My God.
If I get that shit.
Courtney, should we leave? Just kidding.
Like you're sensitive.
Yeah. If I pick that up more, I really don't know. I don't think I've ever seen anything except for that time in that house where I thought I saw your roommate, but it wasn't your roommate.
Feeling though is almost scarier in a way, like not being able to see, but to feel the presence.
Mm-hmm. It can be pretty creepy. Like I said, I have to sleep with a sheet over my head every night because that's not enough protecting me. I sleep with 3 blankets over my head.
Oh my God.
Every night.
And a Harper.
and a Harper laying on my head.
One of our dogs sleeps on his head.
But the creepiest part is you look exactly like your Uncle Ellis. We're going to post the picture. It's bizarre.
I know. Isn't he gorgeous?
He is.
We share a lot of similarities. He was an architect.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to be an architect my entire life until I got to high school and realized I was shitty as hell at math.
But you're an interior designer.
Yes. Another scary house moment. Chad and I lived in this one house that had a murder. Well, an attempted murder. They actually ended up dying outside of the house. But someone was shot by a crazy husband or crazy lover.
Before you lived there.
Yeah, before we lived there. And anyway, we had bought the house. And sometime in the middle of the night, I had heard a woman scream.
Jeez.
But yeah, we've had all kinds of crazy experiences. Another thing with that ghost app, I had taken it to New Orleans because we go to New Orleans all the time. So I was like, oh, what kind of crazy shit might pop up on taking New Orleans? There's a building called the Cabildo. It's in Jackson Square. It's the Louisiana State Museum, but it was originally a court and a jail. And then I think it burnt down in the 1800s and it was rebuilt. But we were going through that and I don't remember what the name was, but it was a name of someone that popped up. And I remember I looked it up. The last name of an author who was from New Orleans who had died, and the last book he wrote was about that building.
Ew.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to pass on that one.
This is crazy, crazy stuff.
My favorite part of that trip with that app story was our friend Clay really got into it because of that. So he downloaded it. So they both had it on in the city of New Orleans, which is like the most haunted city in America. When we woke up that next morning, one of them, when they woke up, all their ghost app said was stabbed. And they were like, oh my God, we are deleting. So they deleted the app.
That was the end of the app.
Stabbed. Yeah. That's all it said. And those hotels and everything are so old. Odds are somebody had been stabbed in that hotel.
For sure. Well, and when we went to Lafitte's, the bar, take pictures with your flash, you can see orbs in the live photos.
Oh, yeah. All over the place.
I'll try to post some of those from our time there, too. Scary.
It's pretty scary. I'm just a little haunted Jordan over here.
I think all those things are connected, though. I don't think it's a one-off thing. I think the way you were born, and that's not an insult. It sounds like I'm dissing you, like the way you are as a person. But I think the way you were born, the uncle thing, all those things I think are connected as one sort of long story. As long as they don't attack me, I don't really care.
I forgot to mention that my great uncle Rex passed away in 2002, the same time that I started feeling those presence.
I think it's your uncle Rex Ellis. Mm-hmm. Should we talk to him? With a name like that, he has to be a ghost.
Have you used a Ouija board before?
Nope, no. And I will never do that.
I used a Ouija board once, and it spelled out my dad's middle name.
Oh my gosh, Jordan.
Well, now we know why you're seeing ghosts, because you Ouija'd.
I did it in the dark with candles too, like legit. I always try to look at it through a skeptic's point of view. I want to figure out the facts. And apparently it's your subconscious is doing it. But my hands were guided to those letters.
Creepy.
It's weird. I have no explanation, really.
Did you ever go in that house in Ponca that's abandoned?
I never went in there.
I did.
I wish I could have gone in there.
Okay, so apparently her and her husband lived in this old farmhouse. It's like kind of in the middle of town, really, but it's in the middle of a field. And then they built this housing addition right next to it. And she built up that housing addition and she was crazy. Like, we know some people that bought a house in there. Like, she had super strict restrictions on what you could build, what your house looked like, all those kinds of things. But I guess her husband passed away in that house that they lived in, and she decided to keep the house, but she moved out of it. She would go back to the house and visit him and talk to him. Mm. He was the one that made the decision. So she would go and talk to him about, like, this person wants to build a house. Are you okay with it? He made all of the decisions still after he was dead.
That's strange.
So it was obviously abandoned, and like, people would go and, you know, whatever, right on the walls or whatever. So one night in high school, me and my friends went. And I mean, you have to drive way back. It's in the woods, just in the middle of the woods. So we went and we got in the door, and there was graffiti and stuff on the walls. But in one room, there was a rocking chair with candles all around it.
Wait, were the candles really burning?
They weren't burning. Must be where she like comes and like talks to him. It was cool, but it was creepy. I was freaked out. I started crying and I was like, I gotta go to the car. Like, I was like,
crying.
I'm done. Yeah. Oh. It's real weird.
I think if I die before Jordan, he'll do the same thing. He'll come with his little candles and start talking to me.
He'll set up a rocking chair.
Totally. It'll be like from Pottery Barn. Like, he's not going to get like a garage sale rocking chair.
Oh, no.
Okay. Y'all ready for this?
It was a dark and stormy night.
Kind of. Not really. This story is about the Baker Mansion in Weatherford, Texas. Weatherford is 26 miles west of Fort Worth. And the only reason why I know about this story is because my aunt lives in Weatherford and I visited there many times. I lived with my aunt for a summer in college and I've driven past this house. Ooh. So Weatherford has like all these really cool old huge Victorian homes. Like,
cool.
Yes, the houses are gorgeous there. So this is a story about one of them. A little backstory. Weatherford was founded in 1856. In 1890, a man named J.D. Baker and his business partner named Poston, began a dry goods business. They purchased a building downtown and their business was very successful. Mr. Baker was married and they had four children. Listen to these names. Charles, Harry, Mary, and Ethel. Try to say all the Charles, Mary, name. Harry, Mary, Ethel. Come here.
Do it for us again.
So in 1894, the Bakers began construction on an almost 7,000 square foot Victorian home in the city of Weatherford.
It's a big house.
Yeah.
It's
cozy.
It was around that time that their 13-year-old daughter, Ethel, passed away, and this began the Baker family tragedies. In 1899, at the height of his success, Mr. Baker died suddenly. It was Easter morning, and I also couldn't find any reason of why he passed, but it was unexpected. And Mr. Baker never got to see the completion of his massive Victorian home.
You always have the most polite way to tell stories. You always call people Mrs. and Mr. and Miss. It's
We're
very
Southern
formal.
Ladies.
Well, Mr. Baker was a successful man and he needs a little bit of credit.
Are you Southern or are you Midwest ladies?
We're Southern.
We're both.
We decided last week.
We're both.
I'm Southern.
I am a Valley Mid-Southern girl. There we go.
That's a new thing you just started.
I just did. Y'all want to join my club? Valley Mid-Southern girls. So Mr. Baker never got to see the completion of his home, which is really sad. And 9 years later, tragedy struck the family again. Charles Baker, JD's son, was now the buyer for his dad's dry goods business. And in 1908, he left for San Francisco to head to Seattle on a buying trip. And this was the last time anyone saw Charles. He disappeared without a trace.
Poor Chuck.
Where'd you go, Chuck?
Chuck. I'm going to call him Chuck from now on. the family.
That's Mr. Chuck to you.
Sorry, Mr. Chuck. Mr. Charles Chuck Mann Baker. The family was clearly upset about the disappearance of Charles. Now I'm literally, I had to catch myself from saying Chuck. Yeah, I mean, just then.
Your story. You can call him whatever you want.
We'll call him Chuck. The family clearly upset about the disappearance of Chuck put out a fire.
Chuck.
Chuck.
My name's
Y'all are
Chuck,
making it really difficult.
Like Chuck.
Really difficult to tell my story.
Sorry, continue.
Anyways, they put out a $5,000 reward for any information on the whereabouts of Charles. So I have a pic of the reward flyer, which I was kind of surprised that I was able to find that, but yeah. I did. But sadly, little old Chuck Charles was never found. The reward money was never collected. And in 1936, Mary, his sister, had his will probated because she just assumed he was dead. Harry, you know, the other bro.
Harry, Barry, Mary, and Larry. Those yep. are their kids.
Basically. He also died shortly after Charles went missing from a ruptured appendix.
Yikes.
So again, unfortunate. So that's now, if you're counting, three of the Baker children that are dead.
Oh my God.
Or gone, or missing, or who knows where. So Mary, the last living Baker child, married and moved to Oklahoma City.
Ooh.
While Mrs. Baker, JD's wife, remained in the home in Weatherford until she became ill and moved to Oklahoma City with Mary. Mrs. Baker owned the home until she died in 1942. Mary then sold the home to the Fants. So George and Alina Fant were the ones who purchased the Baker mansion, but George had been previously married to a woman named Frances. I thought this was creepy, so this is why I put this in here. George and Frances had two children, Marion and Knox. And Marion died at the age of 7 from a ruptured appendix.
Ooh, doppelgangers.
Yeah.
Yes. And Knox died in 1942 in a plane crash.
Jeez.
So both of their children
yeah.
also passed, one of which was from a ruptured appendix, just like Harry.
Crazy.
George and Frances didn't work out, so then he married Alina. So George and Alina Fant owned the home until the late 1970s, and George passed away in 1962. This is where I'm going to start with the ghost stories, and I'm going to read a letter that's from one of their nieces that used to stay with them
okay.
in the Baker Mansion. In a letter dated September 2000, she wrote, "My aunt and uncle bought and restored the old Baker house in the early 1940s. Now, I know this sounds crazy, but I also know what I've seen. The first time was during World War II, sometime during the summer. I was staying with my aunt and uncle along with another aunt. I was about 13 years old when she and I were sleeping in the easternmost bedroom downstairs. This bedroom has a door leading to the southern side of the veranda. Only the screen door was latched, and I remember all was quiet and everyone was asleep. I was awakened by the sound of someone very quietly and slowly walking down a small hall on the south side of the house that connected an inner bedroom with the bedroom my aunt and I were sleeping in. I closed my eyes, afraid to look up. When I finally got the nerve to open them, a figure was standing at the foot of the bed. I screamed loudly, enough to wake the dead, and the figure immediately disappeared." I love that she wrote that. "Enough to wake the dead. Naturally, everyone in the house descended upon our bedroom, and the consensus of opinion was that I was merely having a nightmare. But I know for certain that it was no nightmare, because I was very much awake when I heard him. That was the only time he ever appeared when anyone else was ever around, and the last time that I ever screamed. I didn't spend the night in that house again for a long time. My parents and I moved out of town, and I didn't return until the early 1960s, 20 years later. In the meantime, my aunt built a smaller house adjacent to the large house just to the southwest, leaving a gate connecting the two properties for easy access. Against my better judgment," really, girl? "Against your better judgment, I returned to the house and stayed a while with my aunt. One night before I was married, I was reading in my bedroom, which was on the second floor. My aunt was still living there at the time and was in her bedroom slash den downstairs. It was again a warm night, but not warm enough to turn on the window air conditioning units, so my aunt had turned on a huge exhaust type fan in the upstairs window over the stairway. I suddenly heard a loud cry. Well, not an actual cry, but more like moaning."
Ugh.
It's a ghost or sex.
Oh,
one
no.
or the other.
Oh, no.
Ghost having sex.
Ghost sex.
That could be the third option.
Possibly. "I quickly ran from my bedroom to investigate as I was afraid my aunt had fallen and was crying out for me, but her lights were out and I could see nothing. I realized that the crying was not coming from her part of the house. It seemed to be emanating from the area near the front of the house close to the dining room. The wailing went on for at least 5 minutes, and me, being your basic coward, went back to my room, locked the door, and tried to sleep. That would be me. I'd be like, this is a no for me. I probably would have just left the house.
This is a no for me.
I'm done. I'm out. See ya.
It sounds like you and I may have co-written that.
Who are you going to call?
I'm not calling anybody.
Courtney.
I'm
Bethany would have been like, I went back, I got the shotgun underneath my bed.
For real, though.
Courtney and I, you hear squealing tires as we leave.
Yes. Jordan's like, what's your name, ghost?
Yeah, he's talking to it.
Let me get the Ouija board out. Okay, back to her letter. The next morning at breakfast, my aunt said nothing, and I decided I best keep my mouth shut. If you had known my aunt, you would understand why I make this statement. My aunt went on to work, and I was getting ready to do the same when her maid started yelling at me to come down to the dining room. In the downstairs part of the house between the dining room and the hallway are heavy sliding doors. Lying next to one of those doors was a huge dead bat. We were never able to determine where the bat came from or how he got into the house. The front of the house was always kept closed off from the back of the house because we had plenty of room in the back after my uncle had added a huge den, so it was easier to cool and heat by closing it off from the front. The maid, however, inspected and cleaned the front every day, and the bat was not there the day before. Even though I know what I heard the night before was definitely not a bat, I still tried to write it off as vivid imagination. Most of the strangeness happened in the house when I was alone. I think that is why I never mentioned it to anyone. There was a pocket of cold, not cool, but extremely cold air in the downstairs hallway close to the living room. No matter how hot the day, when I would walk down that hall, there was about 5 feet of very frigid air, and I was always very startled by it. Yet if someone were with me and we walked down that hall, the air was always normal, cool or warm, depending on the time of year.
Creepy.
It's like it didn't want anyone else to know.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was targeting her. And the fact that she never told anybody. Like, she never mentioned this to her aunt.
It sounded like the aunt was maybe somebody who wouldn't believe in it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Big skeptic. One day in the mid-1960s, I was with my aunt shopping at stores on the Weatherford Square downtown. We were in a boutique called Sturgis Allen. The elderly owner of the store, Mrs. Bozell, and I were having a conversation about the old house. She told me that sometime back in the 1920s, her aunt attended a party given by Mrs. Baker. At some time during the festivities, a loud noise emanated from a large armoire located on the first floor that had belonged to Charles Baker.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Jordan knows I am anti-armoires.
Why?
Because they're all haunted.
Have
you ever seen an armoire where you're like, that doesn't look haunted? They all look haunted and they all are haunted. Right? Isn't armoires I'm terrified of?
The Conjuring.
Don't ever open an armoire if you're in someone else's house. You will be possessed.
By Charles Baker.
By anyone. Any ghost that's in that area.
I think they're beautiful, though.
Yeah, like, that's how they get you. That's how the ghosts get you. They're not going to haunt a garbage can. Who's going to stick their head in a garbage can?
That's true.
In The Conjuring, a kid walks over to one because there's like a hand that's going like,
ew,
point,
no.
Like, oh, come here. And there's a demon on top and it jumps on her.
Ew.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
I've never seen that, nor will I ever.
Ooh, it's so
I won't sleep.
Good. It's a true story.
Then that's a definite no for me.
Mm-hmm.
We're out.
That's why, Jordan, this is why you have issues. Because you watch stuff like this. You're like inviting it in. You're like, here, come here to me.
You're the one who has an armoire.
I don't.
Well, I rest my case.
Mrs. Baker does.
I think they're beautiful pieces of furniture.
They really are.
Yeah.
They're so intricate. Like, yeah. Nice, heavy, good old piece of wood.
Yeah, they're heavy because they have to hold a load of a dead spirit. Hello.
That's unfortunate.
Okay, so the party.
Yes, okay. The door of the armoire opened and an old starched collar rolled out and down the hallway and stopped near the large wooden sliding doors. She said the partygoers were more than mystified by the event as it scared some quite a bit. I then thought deeply about what she had reported and it gave me quite an uneasy feeling because the collar stopped in about the same place the bat was found.
Hmm.
The house sat empty for a while after my aunt built the new house next to it, and in 1970, my husband and I moved into the house with plans to purchase it, which is kind of interesting because she's freaked out by this house, but she's going to buy it.
Yeah.
Okay. My husband worked a lot at night and sometimes traveled, so I was in the house alone for 5 to 7 days at a time. After living there for about a year, the visitations started.
Oh, I don't like that word.
They're just visiting. They're on vacation. They got a drink in their hand.
They're just visiting.
They got Barry Manilow playing in the stereo.
Hey, except my gosh. Something tells me this isn't the Weekend at Bernie's.
It could be. They got the mimosas flowing from a tap.
That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
Oh, I love a mimosa.
It's unfortunate. That's not how this went.
Oh.
Our bedroom was upstairs on the south side. One night, while alone in the big house, I woke up and was sure I heard something on the stairs. The dogs were outside and one of them started howling. Then I saw a shadow along the wall of the stairwell rising toward my bedroom.
I was a shotgun.
Yeah. Done. Out. I'm jumping out the window. I don't care if it's on the second story. I was absolutely terrified. I couldn't reach the phone. I couldn't say anything. Just lay there. Once again, I closed my eyes and kept them closed. I heard the footsteps enter my bedroom and approach my bed, and then I felt a hand gently touch my shoulder.
Oh my gosh.
Nope. Chad, don't touch me.
I never felt touched. I will say that.
I would lose my shit if something touched me and nothing was there. I would go like shower. Like I'd be like, get off me.
Go shower.
Well, the ghost isn't going to be dirty.
I ain't worried about no germs.
What would you shower for?
Because I just want it off of me. Like, get off me. Ugh.
Ugh. It's probably like, ugh, human. Ugh.
Probably.
You're going to be a human sage.
Honestly, they're probably just not touching any of us right now because of COVID.
They're taking a break.
They are.
They're on vacation.
I opened up my eyes and jumped up very quickly, but nothing was there. I don't know what the neighbors thought, but I immediately got up and turned on every single light in the house and left them on until daylight. In the bright light of day, I did my best to convince myself that I had another nightmare, just like the one 30 years earlier. So this has been going on for this joke for a while. The same event happened to me at least 6 to 7 times during our years in the house, always with the same result. Someone would slowly ascend the stairs, walk into my bedroom, place his hand on my shoulder, then disappear. Unnerving to say the least. Still, I never told anyone, not even my husband.
Why not, girl?
Do you think she had feelings for this ghost and she was awkwardly like, oh, I don't want to tell my husband.
Oh my gosh.
It's our secret.
It's our secret love.
I mean, he did
love.
Come into her room at night.
Ugh. And he was like, I won't tell if you won't.
Okay, is this ghost with like Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze?
Yeah.
This is
like
making some pottery.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were going to tell a romance story tonight.
There were times when I felt someone was watching me. I felt whatever it was wasn't exactly friendly. I did not feel potential violence as much as plain malice. This almost became a daily feeling. Anywhere I went in the house, someone was watching me, and I became extremely edgy and frightened, afraid to leave and afraid to stay. Then for a period of months to a year, there would be no feelings of being watched and I would relax. The worst incident of all happened in the spring of 1976. I was alone late one night and one of those Texas storms blew in with its usual violent winds, rain, hail, lightning, and thunder. At that time, there was an electric transformer in a pole about 20 yards east of the corner of Lamar and Columbia Streets, which is where this house sat, that would blow every time there was a drizzle, and of course it blew in the storm, so I had no lights. I was upstairs in the bedroom, thunder crashing, lightning flashing, wind blowing, something fierce. Suddenly, I heard a loud pounding on the door that leads from the basement to the hallway downstairs.
Oh my gosh.
My heart's kind of racing. I already know the story, and I'm like, oh my God.
In a mansion with no electricity? Nope.
And there's a knock on the basement door.
Pounding.
I'm going to open it. Uh-uh. It could be your long lost ghost love.
Is her basement flooded?
No, listen to this. She says, this particular door was always securely locked and there was no way out of the basement except through the house via the hallway. I first tried to tell myself that the wind was causing the door to rattle, but a rattle didn't sound like that. Someone or something was loudly and furiously pounding on that door from the basement side. I managed to get to the telephone and contact my aunt next door. She immediately knew I was frightened out of my wits and said she would meet me at the gate. I ran downstairs in my nightgown, not even stopping to get my raincoat or shoes. The second I passed the door, the pounding stopped. I went through the kitchen, locked the kitchen door, and started across the screened-in back porch to leave the house, but as I crossed the porch and neared the door to leave, the pounding started again, louder and angrier than ever.
Oh my gosh.
I ran across the driveway to the gate where my aunt was waiting for me. I can honestly say that I have never been more afraid than I was that night, before or since. I still said nothing more than the storm unnerved me. So she still didn't tell anybody.
Why?
I don't know.
She's secretly in love with this ghost. I'm telling you, that's where the story's going.
Chad has it figured out.
She says she was never comfortable again in that house. A year later, my husband and I divorced and I left the house for good.
They divorced. What a shocker.
She left him for the ghost.
She left him for the ghost.
I truly believe that the ghost spirit figure that appeared to me in 1942 was that of Charles Baker, and I don't think he liked me one little bit. Well, I guess that answers it.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't tell anybody and you divorced your husband.
Maybe she liked it rough.
Oh, you went there. No. You nasty girl.
Well, you know, he did give her chills.
Oh. Again, we're not that kind of podcast.
Tonight we are.
The reason why I know about this house is one time I was just driving around Weatherford with my aunt, and she was like, hey, look at that house right there. It's kind of like up on a hill. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's gorgeous. It's just like all the other beautiful Victorian homes around. And she was like, yeah, it's haunted. And I was like, wait, what? And I didn't even know this story till I looked it up. The story she told me was that early 2000s, mid 2000s, the family that was living in that house, the housekeeper was in the house cleaning, normal day, during the day, and something tried to push her down the stairs.
Oh, geez.
I put a Zillow link to the house because the house has been up for sale for a while and they just took it off the market. Like, they can't sell this house.
Did you see how much?
Yeah. They started at like $1.1 million and they have dropped the price over years for this home.
Looks like when they removed it, it was $674.
Whoa, that's about half, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Jordan, no ideas. I see you looking at me. We're not buying a haunted house.
We have a lot of Texas listeners. So, Texas, if you're listening, tell us if you've ever been to this house.
We do have a lot. Texas is into some like weird shit because we do have a lot of Texas listeners.
Yeah, we found our people.
Well, and Weatherford's not far from like the Dallas area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
creepy.
I think my mom's kind of a medium. I don't think she really knows that, but I'm convinced my mom is a medium because she sees ghosts and there's ghosts around her all the time.
She doesn't freak out really either.
She doesn't freak out over it. So I'm pretty sure she's a medium and she doesn't really recognize that. This story starts back when, I can't remember if it was my grandma or grandpa died. Anyway, she was over their house kind of cleaning up, putting things away. And she was in their bathroom. And this black shadowy figure pops up. And this is the first time she would see this figure. And it kind of, you know, startles her. She's never seen something like this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start the story there, but I'm going to back up to 1994. Her dad is dying in the hospital.
Okay.
She goes to visit him at Oakwood Hospital, where I was born. Shout out to Oakwood Hospital, all the nurses and doctors. So she goes there. My grandma's not there yet. So she's walking in. My grandpa's there, and he's basically in his last days. And he's sitting there in his bed, and she walks in, says hi, and he goes to her, did you see my mom? Well, his mom has been dead for years and years and years. My mom thinks she's talking about her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, oh, mom's not here yet. She's coming in a little bit. And he says, clear as day, no, not your mom, my mom. She was just here.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So she gets obviously chills.
Yeah.
And of course, that's her visiting her son.
Yeah, before he goes.
I definitely think that's a thing.
Yeah, I believe it too. So that's kind of her first. And I believe she was there as my mom's arriving because I don't think my great grandmother wanted.
She didn't want to scare your mom, maybe.
Well, I think she didn't want her son to be alone near these endless days. So she was waiting for someone to get there. And I think my mom pulls in these spirits because they know she's a great person. I believe that. So this is now around the year 2000. She's at her in-laws' house and she sees this black shadowy figure appear for the first time. So period of time goes by and now she's at the house I grew up in and she's getting ready in that small bathroom. Jordan knows this bathroom right off the kitchen. She looks in the mirror and behind her is this black shadowy figure again.
Oh no.
And this bathroom is very small.
That's terrifying.
I mean, you can't.
It's very long and narrow.
Yeah.
I just literally got.
Yeah.
I literally just got chills in my eyes. It was behind
her. It was literally like on her.
If another person's in this bathroom with you, can't hit. Like, yeah. You'll hit them. You can't turn around without hitting them. I know.
That's a no.
Yeah. So she sees this thing constantly everywhere now. I mean, it is literally following her around at this point. She doesn't really mind because it's not hurting her. She doesn't really feel like it's evil or anything like that at all. But she's working in school at this time. I think at this point in her career, she's with kids who have special needs. I think it is. It's what she's doing at this point. And she's at the front of the class and she's at her desk and she looks up and behind all of her students in the corner is this shadowy figure standing there.
Gosh.
Yep. And she turns pale and one of the kids says, Mrs. Previch, because they said Previch because she always said it wrong.
I'm still confused.
Yep. Mrs. Previch, it looks like you just saw a ghost. And she says, I think I just did. And the kids start screaming and some of them get up and run behind her.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
My gosh. That would be me.
Yes.
I would be freaked out if my teacher said that.
Yeah, I would have ran out of the building.
I have like tears in my eyes because I'm so freaked out.
Yeah, I would have ran out of the building. So at this point, she's kind of thinking, okay, I can't have this thing follow me around scaring, you know, people.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Her best friend's Native American. So she's talking to Marlene. And so Marlene says, well, we Native Americans believe that if you don't want a spirit following you around, just say, you know, please leave me alone. And it will. So it's not long after this shadowy figure shows up again and she closes her eyes, kind of tends to, please leave me alone. It does. She's never seen it again.
Oh, wow.
And she kind of regrets it to this day because she wonders if it was an ancestor or, you know, relative. Enter Chad Previch. So this is shortly after it disappears. I had never seen a spirit until after my mom tells it to leave her. So I come home. I'm living in Oklahoma City at this point. I go home and visit. I'm a grown man. I'm in my 20s at this point. I'm sleeping in my childhood bedroom. And I wake up and standing over me is a tall, shadowy figure at the side of my bed.
Oh my gosh, literally my nightmare.
Yeah, and I freeze and I'm laying down and I'm staring at it to the right. And it's just, it's not looking at me because it's just a shadowy figure. And it just floats away. It floats like up over me and just I'm getting chills even though I've already told the story big before, a million times to my friends, and it floats away. I get up and I'm like, okay, I'm a grown man. Should I wake up my parents in the middle of the night? So I decide not to. I get out of my room, of course, and I sleep on the couch. And our dog, Liam, at the time was this big white dog. And I sleep on the couch and I make sure Liam sleeps next to me on the floor. I never slept in that room again.
Oh my gosh, I wouldn't either.
Yeah, no. Never slept. So the next day, at the time, the other dog we had was a little Scotty dog named Gus. And he was going around the house barking at nothing. Well, my mom had told me the day before, we took him to the vet. The vet said it's allergies that's causing him to just bark at weird things. It's something dogs go through. So the day after I see this ghost, we're at dinner with my brother and at the time his girlfriend, now wife, my oldest brother goes, hey, dude, did you hear that Gus is seeing ghosts? And I said, oh, mom said that's just allergies. And I look at my mom and she just goes silent. And she goes, we just made that up. We haven't taken Gus to the vet.
She didn't want to freak you out.
Yeah, we just told you that to not freak you out.
I 100% believe that dogs can definitely...
Oh, yeah.
See or feel presences like that.
Yeah.
That is terrifying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it didn't really have a face. It was just like
a dark shadow. Yeah. And again, I didn't feel like it was threatening me. But of course, you're laying there. You're helpless. It's the middle of the night. My door was closed.
Yeah. You know, what are you going to do?
Who knows what it's going to do?
Yeah.
So definitely freaked me out. And I never slept in that room again because now we sleep in one of the other, you know, other bedrooms.
It's going to be hard for me to sleep tonight.
So creepy.
But I was telling my boss that we were going to be doing these stories, and she has a really creepy story. She, about 20 years ago, lived right on 23rd Street, okay, just a little bit west of Villa with three of her friends, and they had signed a six-month lease. I think it may have been the first night they moved in. She had a dream that an old man with white hair held a gun to her head, and she wakes up, and she's telling her friend this story. Mm-hmm. And her friend gets freaked out. And she said, I wasn't going to tell you this because I didn't want to freak you out. I had a dream last night that an old man with white hair had you by the neck and hung you in my closet.
What?
Mm-hmm. Ew. Yeah.
Jeez.
She said that at this house, they'd be playing cards. The cards would just move. Ooh. That one time they came home and a poster on the wall had fallen in a way that didn't make sense. And this old house had a floor heater, and the heater was on, and it was burning up as they got home, and obviously it would have started a fire.
Oh, yeah.
But she broke that lease. She left. Yeah. And another roommate did, too. Can you imagine you and a friend have a dream, same person in the dream, old man with white hair, and it's a continuation of the story. In your dream, some old man's pointing a gun to your head, and then your friend has a dream that you're being hung in that person's closet.
Jeez.
That's terrifying.
That's very terrifying.
Courtney, you're looking at me like you're going to throw up.
We scaled.
I'm freaked out.
Bethany, I hate to tell you, but shotguns don't do anything to ghosts.
I know. Yeah. That's why I don't like paranormal movies, and that's why they scare me, because what am I going to do with the ghost?
Well, your house is pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, I have an alarm system.
You have
and
a lot
cameras.
Of rooms.
Shut up, Jordan.
Cameras do pick up ghosts.
You get that creepy
hallway. Stop.
Ew, you do. You have like that dungeon-y thing in the back.
We'll come sage your house.
I have some sage.
Then do that. Just when you get home, just light it up and be like, go away, go away.
So here's a story I wanted to tell. It's really creepy too. And it's about one of the most haunted jails in the world. And it's without a doubt one of the most unique jails I've ever seen. I didn't even know these things existed. And as we mentioned earlier, the best part is you can visit it. And I actually found it on the website, and the last tour they did was completely sold out, which with COVID tells you a lot, because it's not like a haunted house where you go and people are dressed up and they pop up. So I feel like for these type of things to be sold out now with COVID going on, they must be kind of the real deal, you know? So the official name is the Pottawatomie County Jail of Council Bluffs, Iowa, for all our Iowa people out there. It held inmates from 1885 until December of 1969, and we'll have some pictures of it on our Instagram. But it is better known as the Squirrel Cage Jail, and here's why. Yep. The Pottawatomie County Jail was a rotating jail that had no individual cell doors, which meant that inmates were constantly rotating inside their cells as the floors had to be manually cranked to let inmates in and out through one door that had to be lined up to an individual cell. Hence the name Squirrel Cage. So basically, the jail's pie-shaped cells revolve inside a cage that only has one opening. To let inmates out, jailers would have to revolve the cells around until the desired cell was flush with that one door. It was one of only 18 revolving jails that were ever built in the world, and it was the only one that had three stories. And in fact, it actually had a fourth-floor apartment. And today, it's only one of three that's still standing. This one had 10 cells on each of the three active tiers. It was originally designed to rotate continuously through the night by means of a water wheel in the basement. In this way, all the prisoners could be watched from a central location. But unfortunately, the 45-ton cell block was simply too heavy to work correctly, and it became stuck frequently. Eventually, the jailers gave up on the plan, and they actually had to hire a night guard. The cylinder itself continued to be used until 1960, but then a prisoner died in the cell, and the cell block was jammed, and the dead body was trapped inside for several days.
Oh, no.
So this body is just sitting there rotting, and they couldn't get it out.
Jeez.
These type of jails had become popular in the 1900s because the theory was that it was a great way that you could prevent inmates from escaping. In theory, they actually hardly worked, because they would get stuck all the time. Inmates' arms would get stuck in the bars because they weren't aware that it would be rotating at a time. Some would get broken, and in some cases, the arms would actually get torn off.
Oh my gosh. Ooh. Yuck.
In this jail, people report being attacked, particularly while they are standing around the cells. So the theory is that these arms that were being stuck are still there, and they're sort of attacking you as you walk by. I know it's crazy.
Phantom ghost arms.
Yeah. Some report that they've been pulled toward the bars, and some leave with nasty scratches. So you can visit this jail, yeah. Many of the jail staff and volunteers have heard footsteps, voices, whispers, and doors moving. Some see dark shadows move across the stairs or past doorways. Paranormal investigators who have gone in there have found EVPs, which are audio recordings of voices and sounds of things that, you know, you can't see from the human eye. They have caught photos and videos of shadows. It's always shadows. While the Squirrel Cage's paranormal popularity has grown in recent years, Because of flashlight tours and things like that, residents as early as the early 1900s felt something was amiss. A jailer in the 1950s refused to live in the jail's fourth floor apartment after hearing footsteps on the floor when no one was even around. Instead of sleeping on the fourth floor apartment, he actually opted to sleep on the jail's second floor where the inmates were housed because he didn't want to sleep on the fourth floor where he was convinced was haunted. So that's how scary this was. He would rather sleep where the inmates were than have his own floor to himself. So why was this place haunted? There are several theories and none of them are good. The first theory are because of several infamous residents. During its tenure, the Squirrel Cage Jail housed mass murderer Jake Bird. Danny, do you know who Jake Bird is?
No, I don't think so.
Jake Bird was a transient who may have killed up to 46 people.
Jeez.
And his weapon of choice was an axe.
Nope.
The old axe.
This is the part that is really freaky. At his trial, he put the Jake Bird hex on those he saw as involved in punishing him, saying that he would die before he did. And guess what? Six people did, including the judge, who died within a month of his trial ending, the court's chief clerk, two police officers who took confessions, and also his attorney, who died on the exact first anniversary of his sentencing.
Oh, weird.
Stop.
He was hanged in 1949. Squirrel Cage also imprisoned Charles Noel Brown, who had gone on a three-day drunken murder spree and eventually was the last man hanged in Iowa, which happened in 1962. And here's the kicker. His noose is on display at the Squirrel Cage Jail. Yep. Ugh. The second theory of why this place is so haunted is deaths that occurred at the jail. Four deaths occurred within its walls. One man died of a heart attack. Another fell three stories when he was trying to write his name on the ceiling. I'm not sure why he was doing that, but he died. Another inmate hanged himself in his cell. And the last person had died. He was an officer. And he accidentally shot himself in some confusion while he was trying to protect the jail from an angry mob during the farmers' holiday strike of 1932. This is the one that I kind of believe. And it's the shortest. And it, to me, it's the scariest. This jail was built on the site of an old church morgue.
There it is.
I believe that one more.
Yeah. One of the professional investigators was quoted as saying, "I've investigated a lot of places, but these locations are absolutely terrifying on a whole other level."
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So if you want to be terrified, Google the Squirrel Cage Jail and knock yourself out. You will not be seeing me there because, as we talked about, when you start having churches involved, I will not be going there. But this place sounds odd, weird, and terrifying all at the same place. I never heard of these type of jails.
Me either. No.
Yeah. But in theory, it sounds great, but it was just apparently horrifying. People would get their arms stuck, torn off.
Jeez.
Yeah. But I believe it's because of the church morgue. That just sounds like a really bad idea.
Yeah.
Would you guys go visit something like this?
No. Oh, yeah.
You would?
I would go if it was daylight.
Oh, I'd do a ghost tour at night. I want to go. There's a place in New Orleans. I want to do this. It's an old haunted mortuary, and you can do overnight ghost hunting with equipment and all that shit.
I don't know if I could survive it at night.
If we have a group of like 10 people and I can stay in the middle of that group, I will go.
I'm still out. Don't count me in.
I would be more interested in seeing it from like a jail perspective. I've been to Alcatraz and that was fascinating to me. So I would go to the Squirrel Cage to be like, oh, this is a cool old jail, but I wouldn't probably go at night for ghosts. Okay, I am going to talk about the Skirvin Hotel, which is located in our hometown of Oklahoma City, but is listed as one of the most haunted places in America.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so buckle up. The Skirvin Hotel was built in 1910 by William Balzer Skirvin. He was an oil man, he had a lot of money, and his goal was to build the nicest hotel in the Southwest. We'll post some pictures of the hotel from back then.
Southwest, Midwest, South.
It's all confusing. In 1911, the hotel opened with 225 rooms, but by 1930, they had expanded to 525 rooms. So this is huge for that time. And, you know, they had
red velvet carpets and $100,000 chandeliers from Austria. It was very extravagant marble floors. It just grew in prominence, and it hosted President Theodore Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Dwight D. Eisenhower. So it brought a lot of attention to our little city of Oklahoma City. It's not so little anymore. In 1988, which is the year I was born, the Skirvin closed.
You were born in 1988. Mm-hmm. I am so old. Oh my God. You were born later, Courtney, weren't you? You were looking at me.
Courtney's the youngest.
Please don't tell me there's a 9 involved.
There's a 9.
91.
Oh God. I was 50 when you were born.
You're a vampire, remember? You live forever.
Yep, that's
Thank
true.
You.
In 1988, the Skirvin closed and it sat abandoned for 19 years until it reopened in 2007. So when I was in high school, we used to go to Red Hawks games, which was the local minor league baseball. Now they're called the Dodgers, but back in the day, they were the Red Hawks. And we would park at the top of this parking garage that's still right next to the Skirvin Hotel now.
Is that where we took our wedding photos?
Yeah. Some of them? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was scary. I would never do that again. But we look good.
They do look good.
Thanks, so, Bethany.
You're welcome. So yeah, we would park at the top of that garage, and then the guys, there were six of us that always hung around together, three girls and three guys, and the guys would tell us these creepy stories about the Skirvin Hotel because you could just see it from our cars. And sometimes when they were telling us these stories, we would see like one light on, and it would always freak me out. At this time, it was closed. It was not under, like it had been abandoned, boarded up, and there's just this light on. Well, as I'm doing research for the story, like today, I read in the Oklahoman, they said that the electricity wasn't just cut off during the time it was closed, but the power box itself was removed. Even still, there was one single bulb inexplicably staying lit.
Ew.
And I didn't even know that was a thing until today.
Ew.
I don't think it's inexplicable. I think it's called a haunting.
That's creepy.
Yeah. But I had no idea back then when we were in high school. Looking at this building as the guys are telling us creepy stories, like, we saw this light. So shout out to Southwest Covenant Friends.
What a great song that is, too. About when they see the light.
Some ghost just wanted room service.
Hey, where's my French toast?
But I read that and it gave me chills. It just freaked me out.
So. Oh, wait. I just realized it's I saw the sign and I thought it was I saw the light. Sign. Never mind.
That makes me think of Stephanie from Full House because she would sing that song and play her keyboard.
I love Full House. Let's have a Full House marathon.
We should.
I feel like after this episode, we
we're
going to
need
PS.
It. Yeah. So now I'm going to tell you the story behind the haunting of the Skirvin. Mr. Skirvin allegedly had an affair with a maid at the hotel whose name was Effie. So he got Effie pregnant, but to save his reputation because he was married and like a wealthy guy, he locked her up on the 10th floor. So she grew to be super depressed because she was locked away in this room. And even after she gave birth to their baby, he still wouldn't let her out. He kept her locked in this room. So Effie felt trapped and just totally hopeless. And the only thing she could think to do was to jump out the window. So she took her baby and jumped to her death.
No.
Yeah. There are no reports of Effie or this occurrence happening in any of the local newspapers or any of the hotel documents from that time. So there's a debate whether this actually happened or if it's just legend. According to author Steve Lackmeyer and journalist Jason Kersey.
Can I butt in real quick?
Yeah.
Steve Lackmeyer was my official mentor when I was an intern at the Oklahoman.
Yeah, it said that he was a journalist at the Oklahoman.
Yes, he got me. He basically helped me get my crime reporting job.
Oh, cool.
Full time. Yeah.
We need to have him
Super
on the pod.
Good guy.
So they said that Mr. Skirvin was, quote, a notorious womanizer and a drinker. So he would use the 10th floor, which at the time was the top floor. It's not any longer because they've built onto it. But at the time, he would use the 10th floor for gambling and for offering sex workers to guests. And during Prohibition, the hotel was a super popular speakeasy. Newspaper archives say the suite of the hotel was raided multiple times by police. On one raid, the police seized fixed roulette wheels. And then in another raid, authorities found, quote, loose women, beer, a bullet hole in the ceiling, and a trail of blood in the bathroom and bedroom. The hotel's first manager was shot to death at the hotel, and it was investigated as a homicide. The Skirvin staff and Mr. Skirvin all insisted that it was a suicide, but they all had conflicting stories. So it's kind of like a shady was it a murder, was it a suicide type situation. Mr. Skirvin himself died mysteriously in a hit-and-run crash following a court ruling that gave him back control of the hotel after a 5-year battle with his family in court. Also, a salesman jumped from his room at the Skirvin and committed suicide. So, this is interesting. I found a newspaper ad for the Skirvin in October 1916. I'm going to read it. I feel like you, Chad, you like these old...
This timey. Is like right up my alley. Yeah. I feel like this is the most... This is the best posture I've ever had because I'm like standing very
You're straight interested. Up. The newspaper ad said this in 1916. To the Skirvin on gay Halloween, for everyone's going, 'tis plain to be seen. Stop, look well and listen, but keep your nerves steady. To haunt and ensnare you, these weird spooks are ready. There'll be joy, song, and laughter, the time of your life. So come and bring sister or sweetheart or wife. Reservations made early, $2 a plate. For the fun dodging ghosts and confetti is great.
Nothing in the world is better than gay Halloween. I can confirm that.
Even in 1916.
Even in 1915.
It's interesting to me that they're talking about ghosts in the hotel in this ad, and this is in 1916. So this has been going around for a while. Before the hotel closed in 1988, guests would complain of not being able to sleep well because they would hear a baby constantly crying. When the Oklahoma City Thunder basketball team started in 2008, I believe, visiting teams would stay at the newly renovated and reopened Skirvin because it reopened in 2007. So word was going around the NBA that the hotel was totally haunted. So I'm going to tell you some of the stories from different NBA players and their experiences. In 2010, the New York Knicks blamed their loss to the Thunder on the haunted hotel, reporting creaks and groans for a sleepless night. Jared Jeffries said, quote, "The place is haunted. It's scary." Teammate Eddie Curry left his 10th floor room because he was afraid to be alone, so he spent most of the night in Nate Robinson's room. Curry said, quote, "I definitely believe there are ghosts in that hotel." The Chicago Bulls said doors were slamming shut on their own and they would hear strange sounds outside their rooms. And ESPN's Bill Simmons said that while he was staying there, he was woken up by the sound of a baby crying in his room. But obviously, he didn't see a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, although I remember all of those. They were big stories, ESPN.
I mean, this is like New York Times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 2012, during the NBA Finals, the Miami Heat also reported these hauntings. And in 2013, Wesley Johnson of the Phoenix Suns woke up to find his bathroom door was closed, even though he had left it open, and that the bathtub had been filled with water.
Ew.
Yeah.
Creepy.
That's no gross. Thanks.
Also, the other theory that I had created that I tried to get to go viral and never did was that the Thunder was paying somebody to do this and nobody would listen to me.
Well, a lot of the articles were like, she's the sixth man. Like, she's on our team. She's
so good.
Isn't that such a great line?
That is so good.
I thought that was brilliant, too. In 2016, one of the most famous claims was from Meta World Peace. He considered filing charges against, quote, the Skirvin ghosts for touching him inappropriately.
What?
Meta World Peace. I love that.
He said, quote, "The ghosts were all over me. I just accepted it. They touched me all over the place. I'm taking one of the ghosts to court for touching me in the wrong places."
If that ever goes to trial, can we live cover that?
You know we will. Live from Oklahoma City.
Oh my God. Live for that.
Taj Gibson and Wesley Johnson refuse to sleep at the Skirvin. Lou Williams won't step a foot inside the hotel. And Tim Hardaway Jr. of the Dallas Mavericks, he doubted the stories. The first time he stayed there, nothing happened in his experience. So he was like, oh, whatever, these players are just superstitious. So he came back for another game later on to stay there for a second time. And I'm going to read you an article that he wrote about his experience from his second night where he became a believer. "This time around, I got into the room and I pulled my stuff away and left. I came back maybe 30 minutes later. As I walked toward the bed, I glanced to the bathroom and stopped dead in my tracks. My toothbrush had moved from one side of the sink to the other. Like, I was certain I had placed it on one side of the sink next to all my other stuff, and now it was on the other side of the sink. My first thought was the housekeeper had done it, but we had just checked in and none of the other stuff in the hotel room had moved. So I went to my go-to plan and I just pretended it didn't happen. Later that night, I was in my room, lying in bed with the TV off. First mistake." He said the first time he stayed there, he left his TV on all night because he was too afraid to not have noise. "Just as I started getting comfortable and was almost asleep, I heard something outside my room.
It was the sound of footsteps. At first, I tried to ignore it. I mean, hey, it's a hotel. Other people are here. That's normal. But then I also started hearing this loud screeching coming from the walls and these little voices. I couldn't make out any words, just quick little whispers. And that's when I started to get pretty freaked out. I jumped out of bed. The first thing I did was close the blinds. Once again, I don't know why. Don't question my methods. At that point, the footsteps started sounding almost like running. I raced over to the bathroom and turned all the lights on to make sure no one was in there. Then, as the footsteps picked up even louder, I swear I actually felt a chill go down my spine. It sounded like someone was right outside my door. I took a deep breath, then put my hand on the doorknob. I yanked the door open and saw a completely empty hallway. There was nobody there.
I got chills.
I'm crying because I'm so freaked out. Chad had to like comfort me.
Yeah, I had to do a little tap tap on her shoulder. That's how I comfort. Tap tap.
So that was Tim Hardaway Jr.'s experience the second time he stayed at the Skirvin.
Oh my God. I'd never heard that one before.
I hadn't either. That's I thought creepy. Hearing it in his words was really good.
Yeah.
Today, many NBA players will pay for their own room instead of staying at the Skirvin with their team. They're like, nope, we'll just foot the bill and go stay somewhere else. Over the years, the hotel staff have reported hearing strange noises at night and also seeing objects move by themselves. They've seen maids' carts being pushed down the hall on their own. They've reported tools missing, furniture moving on its own, and apparitions walking the halls and then disappearing. Reportedly, Effie will knock on doors, open drawers, and cause a commotion in the hall, proposition men with her voice, appear naked to men in the shower, push a baby carriage in the hallways, or stand in front of the window, then run and jump out of it. And that is the story of the Skirvin Hotel in Oklahoma City.
Mm. I'm really glad we didn't record there because I'd be out. Like, I literally would get up and just walk out.
Should people let us know if they have scary stories?
Yeah.
Yes. We want to hear your spooky, scary, ghosty.
If you're a ghost, let us know. We'll bring you on the show.
Go to our website, wildsocietypodcast.com, click on the contact tab, and you can send us your own stories. We'd love to hear them.
I'd love to hear them. I love that stuff.
It's very interesting. It scares me, but I still love to hear it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I love to be scared.
We will let you possess Courtney, and she will tell your story through her mouth.
Uh-uh.
No.
Nah.
No? Okay. We won't do that.
She'll let you come over her soul like pumpkin spice latte.
I will not. Pumpkin spice latte is the only thing that's allowed to take my soul.
Those are sacred, Jordan.
Thanks for listening, you guys. We hope you have a very happy, creepy Halloween. And we'll see you next week.
See ya.
Bye. See ya.
Love you guys. Bye.